Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
You know it is. It's always crazy. We wouldn't be on here, but the world is crazy. And we've got two special guests in the studio out of the chute. We're so happy to have Michael Johnson of the Dane County Boys and Girls Club, the largest public-private partnership in the county, or a lot of places, right, Michael? I mean,
yeah, so we partner with the public school system and
public
the largest
schools?
Public-private partnership in the city.
In the city, and you generate millions of dollars, and you send people to college and all that stuff. And A.J. Carr, who's an amazing phenom at 14, I don't mean to freak you out, but who's been doing speeches in front of large groups and as a non-profit organization, was Building Bosses.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering how this happened at 14. Most people are still playing with blocks until 12. You know, so what happened there? You know, how did this happen?
When I was just growing up in general, I always knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur in my life. And for some reason, I just always had that idea in my head. And I knew so many people who came from the same type of background as me, you know, not a lot of money and just growing up around a lot of bad situations that wanted that life also. So as I started to grow older and recognize that you can be whatever you want to be and you can chase after your dreams and aspirations, you know, despite your background, I just wanted to spread that message to the youth. So when I was 13, like September of last year, 2016, I believe, I got the 501c3 to actually start the not-for-profit. And you know, for Building Bosses, my whole goal was just to show kids that, like, you can just recognize your own self-worth and make sure that you're chasing after your dreams in the biggest way possible to learn how to be entrepreneurs and serving the community and just be self-sufficient, you know? So that's why I started, and that's how I really got started, just being 13 with a dream.
Boy, that ripe old age of 13, I'll tell you that right now. So how's it going with the organization now?
Going really well now. We're at the stage where we have a curriculum and everything for it, because what I plan on doing is putting kids with mentors, like people who are successful or doing their own thing with their own business, things like that, and kind of for those two worlds to collide. You know, I want the mentors to show the kids how they can do different things and how they can really push their goals, and I want the mentors to see how a lot of these kids' life is, because you don't really see that a lot of times, like just interacting on the other side and seeing how much, you know, a background can affect the kid, but how little it can be a barrier if the kid knows how much he or she is worth.
It's worth, you know. My son and daughter had a friend in Verona that was like 15 or 16, had his own lawnmower business.
He
was making pretty good money. I mean, adult money. But not very many of those types of stories. But, you know, so I mean, that you can start when you're young in that regard. But, Michael, you and I were back and forth on the I had tweeted, not tweeted, but 2 minutes with Mitch about the fight at the Broadfest. And you were coming back with, you know, different take on it, given the fact that, you know, people were just reacting to the fact they closed early on Saturday and shut down 2 hours early on Sunday, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
But your feeling is that it was inflated beyond what it was.
Yeah. I just think we should not over sensationalize these issues, but we also should not minimize them. So there were some people upset that I said I was quoted in the Wisconsin State Journal saying kids will be kids, right? So let me be clear. When kids are fighting in a public setting like that, it's inexcusable. But at the same time, we should not have people in our community. The law enforcement never, ever said that these kids was criminals, thugs, and gang members. And so I started seeing that it was reported that way. And I think
in print were the gangs.
I mean, yeah, and they were gang members, right?
Really?
So you think about, I was there all weekend. My three kids was in that carnival all weekend.
Yeah.
And so I just want to, there was two arrests that that took place. But then when I look at like events like the Mifflin Street Block Party, in 2010, 200 people were arrested.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 65 was arrested and cited. Not one time did I hear anybody call those young people thugs and criminals. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't do that when we see kids of color have conflict.
Right. The thug and criminal and gang member, was that social media? Was that?
It was a combination of when one news outlet said gangs.
Really?
When we had the press conference, I was the one
who
called.
No proof of that.
There was no proof of that. Oh, so yeah, one of the reporters asked us and said, hey, we're getting intel that these kids are gang members. And so Chief Mahoney and law enforcement was telling us that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And I just think we have to be very, very careful not to label kids when there's a situation that happens in the public.
Well, that's bad reporting.
Yeah.
Because it's based on hearsay of somebody that doesn't know, right?
Right.
Not to say that we don't have gang issues in other places and, you know, different cities and so forth. That's totally irrelevant.
Well, I'm from the toughest projects in Chicago. I stayed in the Ablett home, stayed in Cabrini Green, lived there 23 years. So it gets no tougher than that, right?
No, it does not.
So we had gangs in those neighborhoods. Gangster Disciples,
yes,
Black
yes.
Gangsters, BDs, Vice Lords. Those were organized gangs. Here in Madison, we don't have organized gangs. We have a bunch of kids that have cliques and clubs. And so when these group of kids come together, and AJ can probably speak to it, that they're not organized. They're just trying to create
right.
a club so these kids can have a sense of belonging.
Now, and I understand that, but I think the news gets conflated in people's minds based on those gas station shootings,
right.
which we've had some of
right.
those. So, of course, and then the mayor goes off, and you've been involved in talking to the mayor and so forth. And so people conjure up their own images
no doubt.
Of that because of shots fired.
And Mitch, let me say this. Anybody who is walking around neighborhoods shooting at cars, shooting at people's houses, we need to get them out of the neighborhood, period. You shoot somebody, you kill somebody, you hurt somebody, you don't deserve to live in this neighborhood. But at the same time, sometimes things get misreported. And a lot of times myself, members of Focus Interruption Coalition, and other community leaders try to go out and provide some support to the families, but also try to bridge a communication between communities of color and law enforcement.
Yes, you have all of that on the crime perceptions, but then you have what you are fighting against, AJ, in terms of expectations, because we have achievement gap statistics, which people dwell on in the media,
yeah.
both left and right, and you see these outcomes in schools. And so then people will think about that as well, because it's not what we want.
You, of course,
are the opposite of that.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, it's not like I was just born this way. You know, I think people are just so wrapped up in the fact that, okay, this happened, this shooting happened here, or this shooting happened there.
Well, but beyond that, it's the trendier long-term statistic on educational outcomes.
Yeah, and I see it in my perspective, just being in school, I see it all the time, like, inclusiveness is very bad. My school is in Verona, and I've heard this from many people who actually go to Madison Public Schools. It's like, first off, a lot of the kids of color don't feel comfortable going to certain people, a majority of the people in the school. And also, we kind of trap these kids with labels of just being this way or this way. And then all of a sudden, they just get so, like, surprised when a kid might act out or something. And they're just like, oh, this kid is just out of control. And if you're putting this label on a kid and you're putting this barrier against them and not allowing a relationship to be healthy between teacher and student or counselors, whatever, then how do you expect it to end up?
And you're 14. Go ahead. Yes.
Can I add to that? So you think about, here's a young man who has been doing really, really good in this community. We need to be highlighting young kids of color like him and showing positive images of young men like him. Here in the State Journal, full page ad, where was the press coverage on the 164 kids that's graduating from high school and going on to college?
Exactly.
We had to have a sponsor pay for a full page ad to recognize these kids for graduating and going on to college. Where's the investment to help in Louisville, Kentucky? The mayor of that city said, any at-risk young person that want to work, we're going to put kids to work in this community to keep them safe and to keep them busy.
Right.
Where's the philanthropist that's coming to show up to help build up and support his organization so we can mentor and help young kids? So if you don't put that investment on the front end, you're going to see it on the back end. And so when you to your original question about the achievement gap, why is that? Why are we building school-to-prison pipelines? Why is it our young people are struggling in this community? Mm-hmm. Why is it for 50 years in this community we've been talking about the racial achievement gap, and the reality is it's not getting better?
Well, let's take a crack at this, because I see different groups with different attitudes on this. We had white conservatives who allied them, who supported African-American civil rights leaders like Clean Care and Reverend Alex Shee, and I think you were on Madison Prep. I don't know if you were in favor of that or
So,
but you had African Americans of note in leadership roles with agreeing with white conservatives on that Madison Prep, but white liberals voted against it.
Now
what we have is, when you talk about fatherless homes and all that, liberals will say it's because the factory closed 10 years ago, and conservatives will say, well, there's no father and there's no individual responsibility.
Yeah,
so
it's all finger pointing. So,
well, I mean, it's always a reason.
Right. Well, so get to the root cause of the problem, right? So, yeah, maybe I know a lot of single mothers in this community who are underemployed, who are working multiple jobs to take care of their families, right? So there's always this perception that black women and Latino women in this community are welfare queens, and that's far from
the truth. I think there's more white condemnation of fathers than mothers.
So let me say that, but there's a lot of African-American men in this community who also thrive and do well.
Right.
And I think we paint these negative images of black men. Now, let me point out, there's 5,400 businesses in Dane County. Rarely do you see an African-American leader in the C-suite. Rarely do you see them on boards. And there's some companies that may employ 200 or 300 people, and you won't see one person of color. Now, I love this city. All right? It's one of the safest cities to live. It's one of the best places to live. However, when you look at the employment gaps between African-Americans and Latinos and our white counterparts, there's huge disparities. And so if you don't tackle the economic piece of this issue, we're going to be talking about these issues 20 years from now.
Well, it's been that way for a long time. That's power. I mean, you know, people don't want to share power easily.
That's part of the problem.
But I think AJ will do fine in that in that job market. You're embracing education. You're embracing empowerment of knowledge and the rest, which I'm sure communities across the board and all these different groups would also agree with, right?
Absolutely.
And so in terms of the father issue, there are wonderful fathers, you're right, but there are also some really bad fathers
out there.
That crosses racial lines. But if you look at proportionality, it's not a pretty picture.
Because people don't realize, like, these situations, it's not just like, I hear all the time, every time a situation like this happens, it's just like the youth, and you pointed the finger at everybody who's involved in the situation. But why don't we ever look at the root problem? Some of these kids don't have parents. Some of these kids don't have food when they come home. Some of these kids are having problems at school.
And home is the worst place for some kids.
You have to realize, like, kids have to get raised. I don't think people realize or even bring up the fact that raising is a big, important key in bringing a child up, because it takes a village to make sure the child is good or excelling.
And we should say, for the record, your mother is here, but off camera, so, and obviously it's should be applauding from their seat at this point about her son's performance. But back with more very deep issues. We're trying to solve the problems of the world in 1 hour. I don't know if we can do it or not, but we'll try. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com. 6AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
At P3 Pro, we're invested in creating a dynamic video experience for our clients. Everything from planning, shooting, and editing your events, commercials, webcasts, or films. P3 Pro has 27 years of industry standard experience working to make your vision a reality. We stand apart from your traditional run-of-the-mill production experience and create memorable, moving, breathtaking imagery that conveys your message in a powerful way. We take your vision and turn it into a work of art. The art of storytelling, the art of beautifully crafted imagery, the art of persuasion. Visit us on the web at p3pro.xyz or call 608-571-3776. That's 608-571-3776.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rayl.
Working with Tim was a breath of fresh air. He was very professional. He did his homework. He priced the house where it needed to be priced to sell.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rayl of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
Tim is very fun to work with. He's got a great sense of humor and seemed very upbeat and positive every time I spoke to him.
Tim Rayl, 698-7653.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Hey, looking for something different to do with your friends? You got friends in town, maybe you're celebrating something. Comedy on State is a thing that you want to think of. It should be at least the third thing that pops into your mind. MadisonComedy.com is where you can go to find a complete schedule. Any comics that you could think of, we've had.
For a list of upcoming Comedy Club performers or to purchase tickets, go to MadisonComedyClub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State, MadisonComedy.com or 256-0099.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hank Show.
We're talking about the world's problems, and we're trying to solve them. We've got Michael Johnson of the Girls and Boys Clubs of Dane County and A.J. Carr, the amazing 14-year-old who's got his own nonprofit. At 14, I was just starting to ask a girl out and didn't have the nerve to do it, probably. Remarkable achievement. I don't mean to patronize, but that is truly amazing. But, yeah, there's a positive role model, AJ. It really is. But, AJ, when you talk to your peers, I mean, not everybody's doing what you're doing. So, and you've seen every gamut of life, I'm sure, good and bad. Yeah. So how do you interact with your friends on what you're trying to achieve?
When I speak to people, it's always like a just a straight-up type of thing. So my friends all know what I stand for. They all know what I'm going for. And even the ones who aren't trying to do as much at the moment right now, you know, as far as starting a whole business or things they realize, like, everything I try to push to them, like, when it comes to not fighting, when it comes to doing good in school, when it comes to excelling their future, it's literally because I'm from the same background, and I'm telling you, it's better to just, you know.
Well, I would imagine it would have a good impact on your immediate
And it's hard because it comes with a lot of pressure and with a lot of good outcomes at the same time too. Because it's hard to just, you know, quickly change everybody, you know. And a lot of people who see me doing what I do, they're like, yo, I want to do this too. I want to do what you're doing. Yeah. But at the same time, it gets hard because people look and they say, well, you're saying all these things, but you're not changing everybody around. And that goes along with what I'm saying before. Like, it takes a lot. Like, I'm one person who didn't raise this person.
You're off to a good start. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And Mitch, that's why I wanted to bring, when you invited me on the show early this morning, that's why I wanted to bring a Johnny with me, because young people need to be at the table.
Yeah.
And I would tell you, I failed to reach out to him. I heard that he was saying, hey, we're going to make decisions in our community around young people. Young people need to be a part of these conversations.
Well, I will get back to this one thing, though, because we talk about kids and adults. And Bobby Knight, who has his own problems, former basketball coach, was on Letterman years ago, and he goes, well, kids are the same as they used to be, but they have their kids with parents who aren't as good as old parents. In other words, I don't know. My mother taught 35 years, and she liked the kids, but she didn't like all the parents much. I mean, she liked the kids better than the parents. But as a person who coached in youth sports and was a parent, I liked coaches who other parents wanted to get rid of because the coach might have raised his voice, which I thought was, you know, I grew up in a Sicilian home. That was just conversation tone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we got bad. There are a lot of bad parents. I think it messes with stuff.
I think we got to be willing to understand instead of being understood all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a young lady who on my Facebook page said, Mike, we're all the same people.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why folks don't understand that. And I disagree.
Yeah.
All four of us in this room is different. I'm a 300-some-pound African-American man, young African-American male.
A little close to home on the weight there, Michael.
Say again?
A little close to home.
A little close to home. So you're right there, white male, African-American female. So I had somebody come to me and said, Michael, I don't see you as an African-American male. So I said, and she thought it was a compliment, but it was actually offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I told her, if you don't see an African-American.
Oh, because she's stereotyping. I see.
No, her thing was, we're all the same. And I said, we have to celebrate our diversity. I'm proud to be African-American. Mm-hmm. I'm proud to be bald-headed. And I want you to see this diversity, because if you don't see it, that means you got glaucoma.
We got to celebrate
our diversity and understand the culture and the differences that we all bring to our country.
People are seeing hyped media stereotypes and perceptions based on dark and ugly events. And
But here's the issue that I see. I have a lot of white friends in this community, and a lot of times I ask, have you ever had an African-American person over to your house for dinner? Have you all ever had a fellowship together and had a conversation around today's issue?
Right.
In this day and age of social media, people don't know one another.
Right.
So what happened, they immediately start attacking folks. Mm-hmm. If you were to die today, how many outside of your race, how many people of color, or if you're African-American, how many non-people of color would come to your funeral?
I'd hope you'd come, but I'd have to maybe sweeten the pot.
Yeah, that's the thing, though.
I'd leave some cannolis.
You know, that's a really important thing to recognize, because like Michael said, I understand where people are coming from when they say, I don't see color, but that's a part of the problem too. If you don't recognize the fact that there's a difference, that's a big problem. And I, a really cool person in my neighborhood, his name is Will, if you're listening to this, hey, but, Will Green. He's just normal white man, kids, you know, and he takes me every Thursday to play basketball. And the thing is, we talk about those issues, and I think that's really important. Seeing how the relationship built up just from that, I think that's really important for people to have, to actually speak about what's going on together.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Between people from completely different backgrounds, because I'm a young black kid who was born from poverty. He's, you know, older, not super old, but older white man who, you know, he's born with the privilege, and just coming together to speak about these issues to get those different perspectives, that's a very good way to actually tackle what's going on right now.
Well, I think what happens is you have white liberals and you have who try to talk about the criminalization of black men after the Civil War, Reconstruction, and you could put people back on the plantation if you got them for jaywalking or looking the wrong way to white women. That went on for 30 or 40 years. And
right.
White people don't really want to hear that.
Right.
You know? They just want to, they see what they see on the news. And they see, you know, images on television and so forth, and they see, you know, statistics on the achievement gap, and they say, what's going on now? Because it's 2017.
Right.
And now, whereas you want them to see the history and all these things, but, and that's important, I think, as a white man, but I also want fathers or whomever to be responsible for the children. And I don't care if you're in total poverty, you know. So, I mean, how do we square those all those realities?
Right.
So I would say in terms of, so two things. One, I think there are a lot of positive fathers doing great things for their kids. Yeah.
Granted.
And then, too,
so we're focusing on
you have some deadbeat dads who don't do anything for their kids. And so we know that. And so I was one of those kids. I've only met my father three or four times. And it goes back to what a Johnny mom said. It was the village who helped to raise me. So my
who's the strongest figure in your childhood?
So mine happened to be two people. My sister's husband, named Randolph Spearman, was a mailman. He was a mentor. And there was a white guy. I've been working since I was 13 years old. Yeah. A white guy by the name of Peter Goshes gave me my first job, and he became my surrogate father. So even though he was white, I knew deep down inside he loved me because his actions showed it.
He was an adult who cared.
He was an adult who cared. So a lot of our kids, they need love. They need to know that this community care for them.
Right.
We have to invest in them. We have to expose them. We got to provide them with internships.
What do we do if home is the worst place for them to be? I mean, at what point do we say, hey, you know, you're not delivering here? You know, I mean, what's the next step?
And so there's some families who have some challenges at home. We see it every day at Boys and Girls Clubs, but I think in Dane County we have more nonprofits on a per capita basis than anywhere in the country.
Right. Well, there are challenges and there's abusive violent stuff.
In some cases, right? But some of it is extreme poverty because people can't find
work. Well, I understand that.
In this city. So if you don't train people, if folks are not educated, we know in America, college degrees, only 33% of working age Americans have college degrees.
Is that high?
And so it's actually pretty low. And so,
well, it used to be lower,
but 60-some percent of working age Americans don't have degrees. But when I talk to business people in this community, you can't find painters, you can't find
skilled trades.
So we need to prepare our young people for the workforce of tomorrow, so they can become self-sufficient adults when they grow up.
Right.
Well, I have no skills, so I know what you're talking about. All you do is sit around and talk, and that, you know, gets you so far. But back. We got to take a little break here. But Michael Johnson, AJ Carr, and but I think there are some universal building blocks we should agree on, shouldn't we? We'll come back with that. And your calls as well, 608-210-1667, 210-1667. We've only got a half hour left to solve the problems of the world. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com. Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Or email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Hague.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Hague. How do you differ from those firms that do commercials where they brag about winning a $1 million settlement?
We've all seen the commercials on TV where attorneys are bragging about multi-million dollar settlements. That can be somewhat misleading. Achieving a $1 million settlement doesn't necessarily mean that there was great legal work done. You could have a $2 million case, and you could have a lawyer who settles it prematurely for $1 million. Well, they got a $1 million result, but that doesn't necessarily mean high-quality legal work was done. We get the vast majority of our cases through referrals from former clients and predominantly from other lawyers in the community who send us their clients to ask if we can help them with their personal injury cases.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Haig and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
The all-new Mitch Haig Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Haig Show.
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down and discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
Welcome to the Mitch Haig Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Haig Show.
We're back live on the Mitch Haig Show at MadisonTalks.com. Number to call, 210-1667, 210-1667. And our Facebook friends, hello. I wear a dark coat to cover whatever's there. Michael, you're doing fine. Actually, you sat on the outside seat there. But A.J. Carr, who's a 14-year-old remarkable young man who's leading up, building bosses, nonprofit, also goes to Exploration Academy, we should say. I mean, you're in the Vernon Schools, but that's kind of a charter. Is it charter? Mm-hmm. For very smart students, I'm taking in. I mean, just have everybody, say sign up for that. You can't make it, right? So, you obviously have white students you have to deal with, along with, there's no one race that you, but yet you see every different cultural identity out there.
Of course.
So how can the different groups come together beyond like a common purpose?
Well, I think people need to start talking to the kids, people who are white, talking to the kids more about realizing what is right and wrong in this, when it comes to race, because a lot of kids feel as though they can say things like the N-word, or they can, make racial jokes, or feel like they don't have to see anybody's color at all. And they need to, I feel like a lot of parents need to step up and show the kids, these are the things that's going on. You need to realize this is wrong, this is right. And you need to realize that there is color out here, and you need to see that and see that there are problems that these people face just because they don't look like us, you know. So, you know, just interacting with white kids, I get that a lot. A lot of people who don't realize that because they're not raised in that way, and I think a lot of people should be a lot more, because I go to a predominantly white school, and a lot of the parents don't think that way. So we end up in these situations where it's just clashing.
But I'm guessing that you do as well or better than any white student you deal with academically and all those areas. I don't mean to put pressure on you, but I'm just saying, if I think there is a fear among white people on race, just like there's a lot of pain among black people, that's all we've talked about. So if that fear is, like when Nelson Mandela was leading South Africa and he went and talked to the rugby team and went out there in front of 100,000 people and hugged them all, you could just feel 100,000 people relaxing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain tension that needs to be eased.
The tension is there because it's not an emotional, personal connection.
Right.
And that goes for both blacks and white folks.
Yeah.
If you don't understand the other culture and the other race, you're not going to empathize. You're not going to seek understanding. So if you're living in a bubble, and that goes for all races. You know, I have some friends who are very segregated in their thinking, both black and white. But I also know there's a lot of white people in this community that care about social justice issues. They give their time, their talent, and their treasure to support that.
Yeah.
And the same with black folks.
I think that's what it is. It's black pain and white fear. And if you can, you know, bring those together, understand those things.
Yeah, I was reading an article on a kid who did a presentation in school. And it was about white fragility. And I feel like people should really recognize that a lot of white people are really fragile when it comes to these issues. And they find a lot of things offensive if we bring these things up. And it shouldn't be, because you have to see, I feel like in life, to be right or to come to common grounds and make actual positive change, you can't do that unless you see both sides of the tracks.
Well, people are tense. When I'm around Alex G and Clean Care over the years, when we laugh at each other and make fun of each other in ways that are...
It's because you know them.
Right.
And they know, we know. But, I mean, that just doesn't happen, because what happens is, if you're... And I do stand-up, so what happens is the people who are not in the group that... If you make a joke about some political group or whatever, or a social group, the people who are not in the group feel uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah, and that's
they're
going to
think
that
they are somehow endorsing.
And they, I feel like they should have the right to feel uncomfortable. Like if it's a white person who's my friend, I don't really do this a lot, but if it's a white person who's my friend and we're just back and forth making race jokes and another black person steps in and hears it and they feel offended and uncomfortable, of course, that's...
Well, it's inappropriate to do that unless there's a comfort level established.
But I think it's important for young people to have those conversations early on in life.
Exactly.
To allow them the opportunity to make mistakes, so by the time they get older, it doesn't come back and harm them. And that's both black, white, and Latino kids. And so those connections is important.
Well, I'll put it this way, and your mother is sitting right here, but in stand-up, you can say whatever you want about men. Make fun of men, call men names, stupid, goofy, idiots, and the joke, but you can't say a word about women in comedy. It's just a rule. Well, but I'm telling you, as a comedian, you just can't. It's a rule. You can't.
I don't know. Unless black comedy clubs, I don't know. I've seen it all.
Unless your ex-wife comes in, as mine did once, drunk and was loud, then I could.
Yeah.
But that's true. You can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's. It's not just black-white.
Yeah. It's a difference between jokes and blindly and just blindly offending people without trying to take any other type of perspective in at all. You know, because you can make a joke, but it's a difference between making a joke and then saying something that offends somebody. And they're like, why would you be offended?
And a lot of it's power. And we had a movie, White Men Can't Jump. And if you were, and people laugh because, you know, white men have a lot of power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you feel like you can take shots at
Well, I know a lot of white men that can't jump. I play ball with a group of white men at the Salvation Army on Mondays and Tuesdays.
No vertical jump at all. And, but you're going to laugh about that.
Yeah, you know, but it's a stereotype, right?
Right, but people laugh. But again, I think there's comfort in laughing because people aren't feeling sorry for white men.
Yeah, but then on the others, I feel like people shouldn't be too, you know, crazy about those stereotypes, because when it comes to our side, black kids and black people in general, those stereotypes can become lethal.
You know? Very, very hurtful.
Yeah.
And hurtful is the word. Like, you know, one of the reasons when I was with Tim Metcalf at Broadfest this weekend, the reason I encouraged him to have that press conference, I was like, Tim, we can't have our broader community calling these young people thugs and criminals, because they hear it and
they see it.
And even if people feel that way, they need to seek understanding, because that hurt our kids in this community.
Right. Well, I deal with that with people dissing the NBA on a daily basis, so I understand people have stereotypes based on maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago. I don't know what. Mm-hmm. But things change, and things aren't what we think and perceive all the time.
Yeah.
But I think what happens with conservatives, maybe conservative whites, is that when there are things that are bad, when there are fathers who are bad or irresponsible or neglectful or in jail when the child was young, whatever, that, you know, the only people that is only discussed by white people.
No, I think it's discussed by African Americans too.
Well, you know, that's the perception.
And so I would, again, I agree. There's some fathers who are deadbeat dads, and there's some who does well. But those who are not, if you father a child and you decide not to take care of your kids, shame on you.
Right.
Shame on you. But as a community, that doesn't mean that we demonize mothers who are single, and it doesn't mean that we should provide not a handout, but a hand up.
Well, I totally agree. And so that, to me, should be universally condemned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, not being there for the kid. I don't care what's the mother or the father. I mean, you have a child, now they're number one. You made that decision.
They're your number one priority.
Yeah.
You know?
And I understand the economics of trying to provide. And, you know, I covered stories in news when the families then on Simpson Street, now it's been kind of changed the name. But they'd run out of food stamps at a certain point in the month, have no money. There was no grocery store.
Yeah.
So you'd have to go to the convenience store to buy
food. Look at Ally Dry, food
desert. Then you'd spend all your money, and then the 14-year-old, would sell drugs to get money to buy food.
There you go.
I covered that story.
The streets become their employer.
Yeah, and so there was talk about getting a bus to go to the grocery store and so forth. But, I mean, just basic economic reality.
Yeah. But here's what happened. Here's why a lot of fathers, and it's not an excuse, right? I see these young men graduate from high school. They go try to find a job, can't find a job. So then you get little Bo Willie on the street saying, hey, come and serve some packs for me, and we'll pay you $500 a week.
Right.
So now the streets become their employer.
Right.
They're now used to earning $15,000 to $2,000 a month or more.
Yeah.
And then now when somebody like me try to intervene and say, hey, we want to help you find a job,
it's
hard to match
up. It's kind of like, I can't even tell the joke here about my son's relationship with girls when he was 15, 16. It changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So his 10 to 14 years of golfing a lot, he was good, but somehow that took a back seat to females.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a joke I'll tell you off the air, but young kids of the country clubs like about why he wouldn't focus on his putting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was focused on something else at the time. But, you know, you're right. You're making $2,000. Hey, don't make that $2,000.
You
know,
go at this piece of shop.
Go work at the, go deliver pizzas instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. Let's go to the phones, 210-1667. Hello, Dave from Monona.
Hey, guys. Hey, Mike, I want to let you know, I am on your Facebook page an awful lot, so what drives me crazy is people hide behind these names on Facebook. So I'm on there quite often, so I wanted to be clear up front that's who I am. But it seems to me the biggest problem in this community is the trust for the police.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can have culture differences, you can talk and talk, and we can sit down and have powwows, and that's all great, and as well we should. But the problem I see is these young kids, you know, AJ's age, they come from a culture where they're brought up, and again, I don't mean to lump them all together, but they're brought up to hate the police. And once that cycle keeps repeating, the moment something happens, it seems like until you can get the youth to start trusting authority figures and not always blaming them or using them as an excuse, and we all do it. So, I mean, how do you, I mean, AJ, you're probably the perfect one to answer this.
Yeah.
How do you get your age group to start trusting police where they're not always out to get you? And that, to me, where the biggest problem is, Michael. But, hey, thanks for what you do, buddy. I disagree with you a lot on Facebook, but at least, you know, I don't hide.
Well, the thing is, it's not a thing where people are just supposed to, our people are just supposed to be like, oh, all police are good, because from my, just me growing up, not just people telling me, you know, this is why you shouldn't trust police, just from my own experiences, it's very hard to just put trust in a force or a department that has been, that you've seen kill your own people, harass your own people, arrest your own people, take fathers away, things like that. It's hard. I think we should be talking about that with the other side, with the police, working on, you know, them figuring out how to build trust inside their communities, because a lot of these police officers aren't even from the communities they serve. So I think we should be focusing on pushing that towards them and telling them, dude, you got to take responsibility to make sure these kids grow up and their parents grow up to know that we're here for you, because just from our experience, not what we hear, just from our experience, that's not good. The case at
well,
all.
Well, are we okay, Mike, on the break? Sure. Okay, go
30
ahead,
30 seconds. Let me just add. As somebody who worked very, very closely with both the community and the police, a lot of young people are traumatized by the only time they see law enforcement is when they're coming to lock up a loved one. So that's why I think community policing is so important. So young people can see police officers actively engaged, involved on the front end, instead of always seeing them on the back end. I think that's part of the problem.
Shooting hoops in the park.
Yeah, and that's community policing.
I agree totally. But, you know, and of course, they always say it's too expensive, but it's critical.
It's not.
It's critical.
So, we put forth this 15-point plan and community policing. But when you see on social media, every time you see a young African-American shot and killed, justified or not, when you're constantly seeing those images, it create a level of distrust.
Well, that's more distrust based on, and of course, nationwide, how many are shot and killed based on the numbers. I mean, it's, you know, you look at all of the arrests, it's a small percentage, but it's heavily covered on television. I mean, this perception thing goes every which way, right? But you mentioned taking fathers away. That then gets police officers and their families backs up, because they're accused of taking fathers away when, in many cases, the fathers did something. So it promotes the idea that fathers don't do anything to be taken away.
Right, but some of these fathers get taken away for a bag of weed. So,
well, we can talk about the drug thing all we want. Yeah, I know what you're saying. But again, that gets people's backs up, just like you were offended by the depiction on the gangs. There are a lot of cops and their families that get their backs up,
too. So I have family members who are cops, and I want them to be able to come home safe at night. But it's how you engage a community when you do an arrest.
People are sensitive about themselves and their feelings when they feel like they're being lumped in, because a white cop doesn't want to be seen as a Klansman because somebody else shoots somebody wrongly.
Right.
We'll come back with more as we solve the rest of the world's problems in about five more minutes. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
As life celebrations bring people together, you'll be comforted knowing we have community rooms available for those who wish to serve food and refreshments before, during, or after your gathering. This is Pete Gunderson. We're here to assist with every detail. Learn more at GundersonFH.com. Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson
Great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak in 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com, BucksPizzaMadison.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show. When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com.
At Troy Research, we understand that success is determined by your customers. To realize the greatest success possible, you need to understand what they want and why. Your customers have opinions to share with you. As researchers, our assignment is to gather those opinions, illuminate the issues, and shed the light of understanding on decision-making. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research at 608-271-8884 or email jlittle@troyresearch.com. Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
All right, there's a lot of problems. There still will be after we're done. But don't you think a lot of it is, you're right, Michael, crossing the street, talking to each other,
you know,
having a meal.
That's right.
I mean, a lot of that just breaks the tension. And of course, community policing, the cop is in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Same kind of deal there.
Yeah. Not patrolling the neighborhood, engaging citizens in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There's a difference between the two.
Right.
There is a difference. And you have people who do feel afraid, who want more patrols as well, but then I can't imagine they would be against community policing.
Yeah, so here's what I would say. I think you need a balance of both. Like, I would consider Chief Covo a friend, and I think we need to give our law enforcement officials all the support they need, but it needs to be balanced with community policing and having civilians working in the community to help support officers as they do their work in the community.
I used to live on Park Edge, and Officer Mike Hansen was in the street playing kickball all the time.
There you go.
With the kids. But my perception was that was more too expensive at one point, or people didn't think they could afford to budget for that?
Our budget is a reflection of our priorities. The city has, between the county and the city, over $700 million. And if public safety is not a priority, it's not a priority for the city. And if our budget doesn't reflect that, we're not serious about solving these issues.
Well, there's no question that is worth the investment. And you have to figure out where the rest of the money is going, and you can argue it. But I don't know that there's been much support for the whole general public safety budget umbrella with white progressives in Madison.
But think about this for a minute, Mitch. If public safety is jeopardized, right, you're going to have white flight, business is going to leave, it's going to affect our tax base,
then
people start losing, it's going to affect social services, and then Madison will become a mini Chicago. So I think public safety and education has to be our two priorities, number one, in this city, because if businesses don't feel safe, if homeowners don't feel safe, our tax base is going to decline and it's going to impact everything in our city.
Well, I remember when there was the anti-lawyer ordinance, and there was a lot of white liberal opposition because you might stop somebody wrongly on a bike who was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you went to the neighborhood centers, there was massive support for it from people who lived in the community because there were bad actors who were trafficking drugs on the corner.
Yeah.
But you had white liberals who live in all-white neighborhoods, University Heights or Vilas or wherever.
Yeah.
Voting their conscience to end that.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of that. But if you try to put low-income housing in Tacoma or Sherwood Hills,
people raise hell.
They'll raise hell. That's right. But, so, I mean, we have to kind of call all this stuff out.
Yeah, call it out and figure out how to make it work. And then one last thing. This young man right here, we need to support young people like a Johnny. to give him the support that he needs, to elevate him so other young people can see role models like him and say, I want to be like this young man. And this is a young man who's been on TV, was the keynote speaker for the Chamber of Commerce. He's been on two ABC shows. What is it?
One ABC, one NBC, one Showtime.
He has a role on a new show.
He has a role.
Amazing young man.
ABC, my aunt. I'm just trying to get invited to Sauk City for the weekend.
I really appreciate Mike for inviting me here, because a lot of people don't step out and actually do that, because we have big perceptions on these things because we are the people getting affected by it. And one thing I want to say real quick for the people, you know, looking at these situations and calling the kids thugs and things like that, to stop living through newspapers and stop living through social media.
Boom.
And live your life
just listen to our
with
show.
People live through people
no,
and
right,
actually interact
right.
with these people and love everybody
week.
Who's around you. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to see what's going on and be like, oh, that's bad. It's another thing to actually go in the community and figure out what's going on and try to attack the issues and make a positive outcome. Make these kids into leaders and make these kids into people
and
who want to make positive change.
And embrace, as you have, the importance of education.
Yeah.
Right? And because, you know, it really neutralizes a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
As
yeah.
you can tell by your college graduates.
Yeah.
Going
it's a passport
forward.
To the future. It opens up a lot of doors who you surround yourself around. He
right.
surrounded himself around bosses. And that's, you think about his company, CEOs,
right.
positive role models.
And how about mom, who's sitting right here? I'll put a vote in for mom.
Mom's boss.
I'm working now.
And she don't let nobody mess
working.
With her son.
Yeah. I wouldn't. You would have liked my mother, too. But her language wasn't always good. God rest your soul. Michael Johnson and AJ Carr, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having us on.
We'll talk about getting people off of welfare or government programs into the workforce coming back on The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.